The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Gangsters, what's up, guys?
Kenny Florian.
Oh, my God!
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
And we hope y'all had a great weekend. It is Monday, April 16th, 2018, episode 152 of the Anik and Florian Podcast. You got a couple hosts who feel like they got drilled by a linebacker this morning. So you can imagine how Justin Gaethje and Dustin Poirier feel. But yeah. I hit that red eye right out of Arizona after the show. I know you've been on BattleBots duty. So you were burning that midnight oil watching this main card late Sunday evening just to be ready for the goddamn Anik and Florian Podcast.
I got it, dude. I didn't want to be unprepared like sometimes.
So it's Patriots Day, right? Boston Marathon. You and I have talked in the past about running this thing. We are lifelong Bostonians. At least we lived our 30 up until 30 years old or so on the outskirts. So I suggested maybe 2019. I think that's going to be too soon, Kenny, for us to run the Boston Marathon.
Dude, I've always wanted to run it. I really have. Maybe we should train for it. That'd be cool. Raise some money for something. And
I think maybe we'll train for a half, and then if we think we can extend,
and go from there.
I mean,
if our knees are still connected, to our femurs or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you got guys like Cameron Haynes. Their average Tuesday is like running a marathon.
Right.
So I think we need to just conquer some inner demons and figure out a way to do it. Maybe 2020 is more realistic. I know you got a baby. I might even have a third one coming. I'm not sure. So I think we should just table that goal until
2020 is realistic. I think we could do it. We won't have legs after, but
I know we will not. And how about the fact that I know you're sort of just getting up here and it's early West Coast time, but I don't know if you've seen what's going on in Boston. The Patriots Day Red Sox game has already been canceled. It's 100% chance of rain. It's a mess.
Yeah.
So not a good day.
It's
to
cold
run the Boston
too.
Marathon.
Wind.
Yes.
Yeah.
34 degrees for the Red Sox game at Fenway Park yesterday. So I'm glad that we did not choose 2018 to run the Boston Marathon.
Yeah.
But enough about that noise. So Chuck Mendenhall had a great piece at MMAfighting.com talking about Dustin Poirier, Justin Gaethje, and hopefully our listeners all saw that main event on Fox this weekend. If not, you missed a classic and certainly the front runner at least early on here in 2018 for Fight of the Year. But Chuck Mendenhall, sort of the thesis of his column really is like when you take the pledge to fight Justin Gaethje, when you sign on the dotted line to fight this lunatic, right? You know what you're getting into. And Dustin Poirier knew what he was getting into. Ultimately, he was the better man Saturday night. And this really is the type of performance for Poirier that, for me, legends are made of. He has not fought for a UFC championship. He has not realized a UFC title. But in 20 UFC fights, what Dustin Poirier has done in terms of the finishes, the strength of schedule, this is a signature win that really bolsters his legacy for me. And I was just thankful to have that seat, man. I felt like I should have to pay to have to have paid to be in the building Saturday night.
Without a doubt. First of all, Dustin Poirier is a guy who has sacrificed a lot just to get into the UFC. I've followed his career. I've cut weight with the kid. It's amazing to see his evolution as a fighter. And I think in this performance against Justin Gaethje, we need to also give credit to the Eddie Alvarez fight, to the Anthony Pettis fight, and the previous fights before that, because I think Dustin Poirier was learning a lot about his fighting spirit and what he's capable of. And over the course of those performances, I think he started to gain a tremendous amount of confidence in himself and what he's capable of. So I think heading into this Gaethje fight, him being the more technical fighter, and as you very intelligently mentioned, he knew what he was in for against Gaethje. He knew he was going to have to suffer after minute. And again, what was that like? 18 minutes of suffering or so, maybe a little bit less. Anytime you're in there, you have to understand that real fact that when you face a guy like a Justin Gaethje, you're going to have to walk through hell. And you could see that he was comfortable with that. He was the more active fighter. He was landing the cleaner shots, in my opinion. Man, as you said, he's turning into one of those must-see fighters.
I think he is, and Justin Gaethje already was that guy. And I know MMA Junkies' John Morgan suggested you were going to need a category just for the non-Justin Gaethje fight of the year, because every time. If this guy fights a couple times a year, you're almost guaranteed a fight of the year. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And we could spend this entire opening segment, and probably will, on this fight and what it means for the landscape of this lightweight division. But I'm glad you talked about Dustin Poirier, the fighter, because he had to lean on that spirit a little bit. But let's talk about the fighter here and the evolution. I mean, this is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt who is an outstanding striker. I mean, he landed something like 170, Kenny, of 270 significant strike attempts. He's very accurate, and we're going to talk to Dean Thomas, one of the American Top Team coaches, later, and he's going to tell you, Kenny, the accuracy, the ability for Dustin to keep his chin tucked and to keep his eyes lasered on the target. He stares exactly where he's going to hit and then hits you there. And it was incredible to sit octagon side and watch Justin Gaethje absorb all this head trauma upstairs and walk through those shots. Finally, early fourth round, he could take no more. And for Dustin Poirier, Kenny, at the end of the second round, wasn't a great visual on the stool, obviously. You know, I think some people thought maybe at that point he was a broken fighter if you didn't know the guy and understand what he was made of. But he had to dig real deep in that third round, and then obviously gets him out of there in the fourth. But just a tremendous fight. And really, I think for an MMA fan, it didn't have a lot of grappling, obviously, but it had everything you could possibly be looking for and everything that drew a lot of us into this sport to begin with.
To me, this indicated that Dustin Poirier was trained very well for this fight. It looked like he knew that he was going to have to fight for the majority of this fight going backwards and in the pocket. And you could tell he was prepared because it was the jab, for me, that was the big indicator. He was able to keep Gaethje on the outside repeatedly, and I think that's what threw Gaethje off, and it didn't allow him to come forward like he wanted to. Gaethje, as tough as he is and as hard as he hits, in regards to his boxing, when he gets in the pocket and he starts to grab that collar tie and he reverts to his dirty boxing, he's extremely effective, and he will knock anyone, or can knock anyone or everyone out from that position. He's brutal there. But when he's just on the outside of that, when he's not totally in the pocket, I'm not sure he's really looking at his target. He's just trying to knock something off your shoulders. You know what I mean? Right. He's just kind of swinging, whereas Dustin Poirier was very specifically looking for that jab. He was looking for targets. He was keeping Gaethje on the outside. He was looking for combinations and not just one-shot knockouts. He was moving a little bit better. At times got caught just moving straight back, but laterally he was moving very well. Now, Gaethje was cutting off the cage and stopping that lateral movement with his leg kicks that were absolutely brutal. And yeah, as many as Gaethje threw, I thought he should have thrown even more, especially yes, to the outside. He was hitting the inside, and of course,
right,
we know that they are opposite stance fighters. However, I thought Gaethje should have gone to the outside of the leg a little bit more as well.
Yeah. And if you look at the damage Jim Miller did three fights ago against Dustin Poirier to the lower part of that leg, that was a lot harder for Dustin Poirier,
yes,
to walk on and put pressure on. And even if you saw Dustin Poirier on Instagram, I believe today, putting the pictures out of his leg, but doesn't look as bad as a lot of legs we've seen, Kenny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He seemed to, you're right, not necessarily attack both sides of it, and there was a time in the middle of that fight that he stopped going to it a little bit.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And Gaethje is a brutal leg kicker. He's very well known for that as well.
Right.
And wasn't able to get that dirty boxing going as much as he liked because of that jab at Dustin Poirier. I thought that he really did his homework. He did a good job. And again, it was an action-packed fight. Gaethje is going to make you fight. The pressure that he puts on you is just phenomenal, and Dustin Poirier seemed to have an answer every single time out.
So we had our fighter meeting Thursday, and Daniel Cormier said to Gaethje, your style is not one that lends itself to longevity, and obviously that's a narrative that Justin Gaethje has heard for quite some time. This is his style, and it's not as though he set out to be this type of fighter, mm-hmm, necessarily, Kenny, but mm-hmm, he is so fearful of wrestling fatigue and what offensive wrestling is going to do to his gas tank. These are his words, not mine, that it has created this type of fighter. And he wrestled in the state championship four times in that arena in Glendale, Arizona, lost as a freshman and sophomore, won state championships as a junior and senior. His best wrestling days were at 157 pounds. Kenny, he could easily make featherweight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Much easier cut to 145 pounds for someone like Gaethje than someone like Dustin Poirier, who still to this day is on the all-time wins list at 145 pounds before he moved back up. Justin Gaethje doesn't cut a lot of weight. He's afraid that his cardio is going to abandon him. Certainly it didn't this night, right? I mean, the conditioning was there for both guys. They absorbed a lot of damage on both sides. I don't know that even if you saw some guys breathing deeply, you could chalk that up to a lack of work in the gym. And even as Justin said, he did everything, running, biking, swimming. He did everything he could to win this fight. I think he just ran into the better man, you know?
He ran into a more technical fighter, absolutely. I think Dustin was the more technical fighter. He was landing a good combination from the outside. He was just a little bit more accurate. That left hand that he threw was set up by a jab. He kind of slipped off at an angle. Gaethje did not see that left hand coming. It seemed like he ran into a wall. It was the left hand of Dustin Poirier. That stumbled him. And then Dustin very calmly and being as composed as he was, finished him off. And I thought Herb Dean did a good job of stopping that fight.
And there were eye pokes in a lot of different directions we could go within the fight. But as far as Poirier is concerned, Kenny, for the sake of time, 20th fight in the UFC. He said afterwards to me in the octagon, I've been knocked out, climbed back over and over again. Two weight classes, Dana, Sean, Khabib, let's fucking go. It's time. And as I tweeted this morning, Kenny, I think the calendar and the circumstances right now could align for Dustin Poirier at 155 pounds. It seems like Khabib Nurmagomedov's calendar is November. I'm not sure Tony Ferguson, given his recent knee surgery, would be ready in time. We don't know exactly what's going to go on with Conor McGregor, but if there's no suspension for his antics in New York, prevailing wisdom is that he would be ready and willing by November, even though maybe Conor would want to fight sooner. There is this cloud, and maybe cloud's definitely the wrong word, but this rematch between Eddie Alvarez and Dustin Poirier. This is a rematch that Poirier called for several times in the past. Yeah. If you recall, Poirier wanted to coach on The Ultimate Fighter opposite Eddie Alvarez. That opportunity went to Justin Gaethje, who has now been knocked out by both of these guys, Alvarez and Poirier. I understand there's unfinished business there, but I understand why for Dustin Poirier that wouldn't be a priority now. He wanted that before main eventing and beating Anthony Pettis and Justin Gaethje back-to-back. I think you strike while the iron's hot. He has never had a championship opportunity. Eddie has been the champion. He has defended the title, albeit losing it in that first defense. Mm-hmm. To me, Poirier is fresh blood. I can understand why Dana White would be interested. And even though Khabib presents the toughest matchup for him in this division, I wouldn't be surprised to see Poirier actually get a title shot. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and he's cruised past Eddie Alvarez at this point because it was Eddie that didn't want to fight Poirier. And Eddie has been calling for a title shot. And you know, in my opinion, I think Dustin Poirier is the guy who deserves it above him. And at 155, my buddy Kenneth was like, hey, what are they going to do, man, now that Dustin won? Who's going to fight for the belt? I said, I have no idea. We have Tony Ferguson, obviously, who deserves that shot. Is the UFC going to make this – is going to try to make this fight for the fifth time? Are they going to try to sell – to the fans that, oh, no, guys, it's the fifth time. This time we're serious. Right. Nothing's going to happen. We swear. We're going to have them train in a big bounce. We're going to keep them nice and safe. And they'll be, it's tough. It's a tough sell, man.
I hear you.
So, okay, Khabib, and what's Conor going to do? Conor wants to fight Mayweather, and Mayweather wants to fight in the octagon with no shoes, and basically he wants a boxing fight in the octagon. Dude, get out of here. It's not happening. You're fighting an MMA fight or not. Otherwise, Conor would have kicked you in the face in a boxing match. He would, I'll fight you in a boxing match, except no shoes. We can knee, elbow, and kick. How's that?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Man. Absurd. Right. So that is, and of course, the wild card in all of this is Nate Diaz because he moves the needle. And even though most would argue, at least on paper, not as deserving of a title fight as Dustin Poirier or Eddie Alvarez, or certainly the former UFC interim lightweight champion Tony Ferguson. But it's not to say that Eddie Alvarez on paper isn't worthy of a championship opportunity right now. I just believe promotionally, and this is just speculation, it's not even informed speculation, but that they viewed the Poirier-Alvarez fight more as a win for Dustin given the way it ended. And if they tried to make that rematch, I don't know. I think that it was more about giving Gaethje a high-profile opportunity to coach on The Ultimate Fighter. But given what Poirier has done since, I think he's hard to deny if Tony and Conor are not available. So I don't know. The other people in the mix are Edson Barboza and Kevin Lee, and they fight this weekend in Atlantic City. So either way, Dustin Poirier has put himself in a good spot. And
I agree.
As he said to us, Kenny, on this show 3 or 4 weeks ago, The toughest fight for him at 155 pounds is Khabib Nurmagomedov. So I guess if your team Poirier, unfortunately, when your guy seems to be rising to the top of this division or close to it, the guy who's the champion is this suffocating wrestler grappler that provides the toughest matchup for you. Mm-hmm. But I think he's worthy, you know?
I agree, and I think this was a great result for him. Again, not only as a guy that the UFC can rely on, that's going to show up and fight his ass off. But just based on what he's done, look who he's beaten. Look at his consistency as far as, you know, the excitement that he brings and the wins that he's been bringing into the equation. I think right now he's kind of rise to the top. We don't know what's going to happen with Conor. Tony's out for a while. I don't think they're going to try to make that fight. Not this close anyway, not on this kind of turnaround. So he's put himself in an excellent position.
So an amazing main event, an amazing result for Dustin Poirier. And quickly, before we spin it to Carlos Condit and Alex Cowboy Oliveira, a last word, Flo, from you on Justin Gaethje. I mean, this guy is the fucking man, all right? And, you know, like, whatever the price is, like, if I'm doing something else 5 years from now, I hope that's not the case, right? Like, I will fly to where he's fighting, and I will pay for a good seat. You know what I mean? And I just have so much respect for this guy. And I know people would like to see him maybe tweak his style a little bit. And certainly there are flaws. And you bring up things that don't even relate to wrestling, Kenny. I understand. Just dirty boxing a little bit more, committing to tactics lower to the body, all of that stuff. But, man, I feel privileged to be able to watch this guy compete. And, again, I've said a million times it's a toughness mentally, physically that I can't relate to. But Justin Gaethje, ladies and gentlemen, unbelievable.
It's amazing he's able to walk with those bowling ball sized balls he's got in there, because it's insane. He's a tough guy, man. He's as tough as they come. And again, you know, a lot of times when you get these fights that get put together, like a Poirier and a Gaethje, which gets everyone excited, sometimes it doesn't always pan out. You see something crappy happen, or, you know, we see an early stoppage or some freak accident. This one delivered. Right. We got over 15 minutes of action. So we were into those fourth and fifth rounds. That will go down as an absolute classic. And Gaethje is a big part of that. Gaethje is a guy who will always force you to fight. He's going to test your will. He's going to test your conditioning. He's going to test your chin. And as far as I'm concerned, he's one of the most exciting fighters we've seen in the UFC. As far as delivering a fight, something that is going to get your adrenaline pumping. And that, at the end of the day, is what a fan is there for. They're there for excitement. So, you know, Gaethje, his nickname should be Mr. Entertainment, man. He's a maniac. He really is a savage. And he's an inspirational figure, I think, in mixed martial arts as well, because he possesses every quality that you think of when you think of fighter.
No doubt about it, man. And I don't know what he's worth, right? I just know that for me, he's always worth the price of admission. Yeah, I'm telling you.
Double it, because he can't. The answer to your question, when DC asked him how long can he do this, or what's his longevity like as a professional mixed martial arts fighter, I think he knows that it's not long. I think he knows that he can't do that for a while. What is he going to do? He's just going to deliver exciting fights while he can. And I hope he gets paid handsomely for it.
And as Dustin Poirier said to us, you invoked the word maniac, right? He breaks guys who are just like, man, this guy's a maniac. I got to get out of here, you know? And it's a guy who will finish, he'll kick you in your leg and just make you not want any more.
He suffers better than you, is what it is.
He does. He does. And I think he finally found somebody, and he found Eddie Alvarez was cut from that cloth too, but in Dustin Poirier, that knew he was going to have to potentially leave a piece of himself inside that octagon. He was willing to do so, and he leaves with arguably the biggest win of his MMA career. That brings us to Alex Cowboy Oliveira, who sends Carlos Condit to 7-8 in the UFC, which is just absolutely incredible that the former UFC interim welterweight champ Carlos Condit, the natural born killer, your neighbor's favorite fighter, could be 7-8 in the UFC. And this one had a lot of layers to it, but I guess let's start with the end of the fight. Carlos Condit submitted with a guillotine choke, Kenny. He was out. Now, I didn't know as it was going on, but I can tell you in talking to his coaches after the fact, Kenny, that Carlos Condit was out, and when the choke was readjusted, he came to. So I want to get your thoughts on the end of the fight, but I think Ray Longo is here, so we're going to table that thought for a second and tell you that the Anakin Florian podcast comes to you in part from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/anik, rocketmortgage.com/ANIK, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. All right, let's get to Longo.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute. John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
See, the folks at Quicken Loans said, I know the New Yorker doesn't like sitting on hold, but we want to lead into the Ray Longo Minute. So, you know, we're just trying to take care of the sponsors and trying to take care of Longo today. We told you you didn't have to be on camera. I know you're a little bit under the weather. We don't usually love gum chewing on the radio, but how are you, man?
Hold on. Excuse me. I feel bad. I'm gum chewing. Hold on. Gum is
yes, out. The gum is out. If you're just ingesting this with your ears and not your eyes. How you doing, man?
Yeah, a little under the weather. Shitty day here in Long Island, and that's it. I'm trying to just – I want to regroup, and I got a big weekend this weekend, so I want to lay low a little bit and make sure I'm healthy for the weekend.
And I know you have three guys competing at UFC Atlantic City. Before we get there, did you watch the main event on Fox Saturday night between Dustin Poirier and Justin Gaethje?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I definitely saw that. I'm not going to forget it.
I mean, what are you thinking as that is playing out? Are you just thinking that Gaethje's a maniac and Poirier obviously has evolved tremendously? What are you thinking as a coach, Gaethje, as a fan, when a fight like that is going down?
Yeah, I'm not thinking Gaethje's a maniac. I'm knowing Gaethje's a maniac. You know what? I tell you, I had Gaethje winning the fight. I thought he was going to win, but I thought he was going to make some adjustments from the Eddie Alvarez fight, and he didn't make any adjustments. And I don't know, man. That's a tough dude who throws with bad intentions, but that guy's on a one-way street to CTEville, man. He's got to really be careful. He's taken way too many shots, and I don't even think he has to, but after listening to him talk, you know, it looks like that's what he wants to do. He wants to entertain people. He's got five fights to go. And, man, I hope he's getting paid well, because I think he's taken too much punishment at this point, you know, just in his last three fights alone. And that style is exciting as hell. Who doesn't want to see it? But not at the expense of this guy getting hurt.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me too, Ray. Obviously, he's delivering excitement, and I don't know what he's getting paid. What would you tell one of your guys? What would you tell one of your fighters?
Yeah, here's the deal. Because I think, look, we know Trevor Whitman's a technical striking coach. That's the crazy part to
right.
me. You saw what Rose did with Joanna, so that's not the problem. It's that. And I had a guy like that who was, I'm not saying was as good of a wrestler, but pretty close, man, did not want to wrestle, for some reason. And he had a cardio for days, but his chin started going too, man. It's just, it's a crazy thing. I think it's what he wants to do. I don't think it has anything to do with the coaching. I think they would love to get him a little more technical, but he chooses to, you know, go in there and do his thing. If he would have employed... Imagine if that guy was wrestling in that fight. He wins that fight easily, probably, if he mixes in the wrestling. So that part I don't get. I mean, if he's got to win a show money and win money, then I really don't get it. If he's getting a flat fee, maybe kind of get it. You know, he wants to be exciting. He's kind of stating that. But I mean, look, he's tough as nails, but it's not going to last forever. And that's the problem, man. I just think he's, for the sake of being entertaining, he's really sacrificing his body at this point.
Yeah, your health is worth something, yeah, for sure. Ray, one of your fighters does have a fight coming up, Aljo. First of all, I hope you haven't gotten him sick. Stay away from him.
I mean, come on, Ray.
Definitely. You know what? I was with him and Marab last night. I felt great, so I'm hoping that whatever I think I have, I don't have. But
maybe they gave it to you. Who knows?
Nah, a lot of people in the gym were sick. So
all right,
I got a hit list of people I'm going after if I get sick.
How's he feeling, man? How's he feeling for his fight?
Everybody feels great. Everybody's healthy. Everybody feels great. I think they all have tough fights, and it's going to be a great night Saturday. I think three guys are coming to fight, so it's good. Everybody had a good camp. Again, they're healthy. As long as the weight cut goes good, everybody will be in that octagon at 100%.
So you got Aljamain Sterling taking on Brett Johns. Brett Johns coming off that calf slicer win over Joe Soto. He's 15-0. No betting lines on these fights because it's the beginning of the week. You got your guy Uluka Sasaki taking on Magomed Bibulatov. How do you communicate with Sasaki? Is there somebody there 24/7 when you're working with him, or do you just sort of keep it to fight talk and you have codes?
No, it's fight talk and it's demonstration. And he's not, you know, it's a little weird, but every so often the interpreter does come in, and then when I talk to the interpreter, he is on the game plan, so he does understand what's going on. So I'm not worried about that, and the interpreter will be in the corner also. So he's a great kid, man. I really like this guy. I don't think he has a good record in the UFC, but he's very, very talented. I hope he sticks to what we're doing, and I think he'll have a great showing.
Somebody growing up in Japan, Longo's voice must sound like butter to Uluka Sasaki. He's got a great
Have you ever talked to him? Have you ever even – he's a really sweet kid, man. He's always laughing and bowing. I don't know. He's great energy in the gym.
And he's got a great frame for that division, as we've said. He's got a lot of length to him. He's fighting Magomed Bibulatov, who – you know Ray, of course, because you've been getting ready for this fight. He was 14-0, Flo, before he got knocked out by John Moraga back in October. Yes. He was a minus 600 favorite that night. So Vegas says you guys could have your hands full. I got to think you'll be the underdog in that one. And then real quick, Merab Dvalishvili. So he dropped his UFC debut. It was a split decision against Frankie Saenz in December. Close fight, could have gone his way. And he was to face Augusto Tanquinho Mendez here this weekend. He got flagged by USADA, I think. So you take on the UFC newcomer Ricky Simon, who has a win over Chico Camus. What can you tell us about what Marab's going to face this weekend? Anything?
I tell you, Marab's got a really, you know, this kid looks well-rounded everywhere. He's a young kid. It looks like he's got great stand-up. He's a wrestler. You know, he'll put the takedowns in. I think that's going to be a barn burner, man. I really do, because Marab's healthy, and when he's healthy, man, he's got one speed. I mean, he was maybe at 60% with Frankie Saenz, who's tough as hell, and he didn't stop in that fight.
Right.
I don't know how he did it, because I know, you know, what he went through before the fight, but he's healthy now, so I expect 15 minutes of hell from that kid.
All right, man. Well, if you want to get any bets in on your guys, I got a guy. So we'd be happy to take your action, depending on where those numbers fall. So let me know. I hope you feel better. I appreciate you carving out a few minutes nonetheless. And let's make it 3-0 this weekend. Let's go. I know Sasaki's up against it, but let's go.
That would be great. And that guy you have, he doesn't have a headset on with a baseball cap on, does he? That's not the guy that I'm looking at right now. Is he the guy?
No comment. No comment.
Anyway, all right, guys. Thanks a lot, man. I will. We'll talk after this weekend. I'm very excited.
Heal up, dude.
Take it easy. Thanks a lot, man.
There he is, the Ray Longo Minute, dating to episode one on the Anakin Florian podcast. So I was setting things up, Flo, on Alex Cowboy Oliveira and Carlos Condit. I have it on good authority that Condit was out. He actually had a dream before Cowboy readjusted the choke, Kenny, and resubmitted it, and then ultimately Condit tapped. So not the easiest thing for a broadcaster. Referees aren't always in the right position or saying the right things verbally to the fighter or trying to work the limb. But my 85th degree Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, Kenny Florian, was not sitting to my immediate right. So your thoughts on what Condit was going through, and and what Cowboy Oliveira was feeling underneath him.
Yeah. I think that, first of all, it was funny hearing DC and Dom discuss whether he was out or not. To me, when a guy isn't moving and he's limped over, to me, he's out. Now, there was one thing that was that happened before that. It was the upkick. So, in my opinion, what got the finish was the upkick, because Carlos would never, in my opinion, I don't think a high-level fighter like that would give up a guillotine like that unless he was hurt. And I think the upkick hurt him. He was rocked. He wasn't all the way there. Alex Oliveira is a very strong guy. And he had that guillotine pretty tight. He was squeezing it. Carlos Condit looked like he was out to me. There was a point where Alex started going kind of to the wrong side, and he kind of had to readjust. And then you see Carlos kind of started moving again. It looked like a period he was maybe out for like 2 seconds. He started adjusting it again, and then it looked like Carlos came back to life, and he started raising his head up a little bit. And then you could see he just had no life in him left, and he just decided to tap. He was just on a weird angle, and it seemed like he could have escaped. But it makes sense considering he was already out. He was like, okay, I can't deal with this anymore.
And if you're Alex Cowboy Oliveira, you've got to keep fighting. I know some are going to criticize him. But John Jones did against Lyoto Machida, you can also do that, right? I would assume if you feel the body go limp. Granted, that was different because Machida was in a standing position. Right. And, of course, you run the risk of letting the guy out of the choke. Right. But if you feel Condit go soft, then I guess you can hold back. And then the lifeless body at that point in time would result in the referee coming in. But either way, Cowboy wins here, Kenny, as a 2-1 favorite, and he accepted this fight on short notice. He thought he was going to fight May 12th in Rio de Janeiro at UFC 224, but he did not have a fight scheduled, I don't believe. So he was in good enough shape. He was 203 pounds, so he had only been training for 10 days or so, but made it so that the cut wasn't too bad. He's long, he's strong. Vegas knows he was supposed to win this fight. Condit obviously has struggled and has only fought a couple times in the last year and a half, 2 years or so. But for Carlos Condit, Kenny, where does he go from here? You know, most of his opponents in the UFC and the WEC have been able to take him down at points in the fight. You know, some suggested, and I did on the broadcast, that the scowl was back. I think the motivation was back. Condit is the father of two. His kids have demanded a lot of time from him, and that's where he wants to be spending his time. But what would you tell a 33-year-old Carlos Condit, who still loves to do this, but is now staring at four straight losses and not a lot of answers for certain styles in there, at least given the recent film we have.
Right. Well, I actually thought Carlos Condit looked way better than he did in his last fight. It looked like, as you said, he had that kind of fire back. I didn't see that fire in the last fight. And, you know, typically he makes mistakes. He's a slow starter. You know, it takes him a little bit to get warmed up, and he was just getting warmed up until he ate that upkick, and then kind of that shifted the momentum back into Oliveira's side, which allowed him to get the guillotine. I think you got to let him fight one more. I think you got to let him fight one more just to see is that the case. Now, the problem is, do you want to be that guy that is the stepping stone for the young fighter coming up? You know, that's the hardest thing for me in this sport, is when you get a guy who went from being elite, one of the top three guys in the division, to now being a gatekeeper.
Right.
You know, and that's the sad thing for me, to see a guy like Carlos Condit, who I thought was a great fighter, a guy that I thought was – you know, talk about Mr. Excitement. He always delivered, always came to fight. He was a finisher, fought for the belt, former world champion over in the WEC, been doing this a very long time, was a part of this sport when no one was really watching. So, this is a tough one for me. I think, again, given his situation, he does have two kids. He has a family he has to get, he has to take care of. Give him one more fight to see how he does here. I wish him the best. He's a good dude.
He's a great dude. And you're right. In a lot of respects, he was Gaethje before Justin Gaethje in the UFC, just in terms of his mass appeal and how much his fellow fighters appreciated his style and what he brought to the octagon. It's just amazing how this narrative, though, could be for Carlos Condit. A lot of people talk about the split decision loss to Robbie Lawler at UFC 195 that would have made him the undisputed UFC welterweight champion when he head kick rocked George St. Pierre, I think UFC 154.
Yes.
Right. after becoming the interim champ with a win over Nick Diaz. I mean, you're talking about a guy who at one point was on the fast track to the UFC Hall of Fame. And I don't want to sit here and say that he has fought his way out of the Hall of Fame, but I'm not sure. Like, Diego Sanchez is getting in, right? Does that mean Carlos Condit is getting in? Carlos Condit had a belt around his waist, right? So I don't know. I don't know if Carlos Condit's a Hall of Famer. I think he probably is, but I think to say that his status is gatekeeper right now is not insulting him either. You know, he was supposed to fight Matt Brown. This is a different stylistic challenge. I think if he can wait for Matt Brown to heal from the torn ACL, that fight would still have a lot of legs. And I would say, Kenny, ultimately, even without asking Carlos Condit, I know he's going to want at least one more.
Yeah, you know, you got to beat Alex Oliveira. And this is no offense to Alex Oliveira, but those are the guys you got to beat. Like, you know, he's a guy that for Carlos Condit, if you look at what they've done in this sport, Carlos Condit should get a win over Cowboy Oliveira every single time out. And I don't I think those odds that were formulated for this fight, I don't think were so accurate.
Yeah, well, right. And I don't know if you saw my tweet, but I was surprised that it was that wide. Like, if you had asked me before the fight, I would have thought it would have been maybe a pick 'em. I wouldn't think Carlos Condit would be plus 170. And then the sharp money pushed him even north of that, closing at like plus 180. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was rooted in the fact that we knew Alex Cowboy Oliveira had taken the fight on short notice. But Oliveira mixed it up and is able to get the first guillotine choke of his career. All right, this episode of the Anakin Florian Podcast brought to you in part by 4hims.com. Flo, you may not want to hear this. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35, and we have a good buddy who listens to this show. I'm not going to say his name, but he refuses to shave his head. He's just going to either go down swinging or figure out a solution. And the good news for him, there are options if you want to do something about this, and I'm not talking about some of those weird solutions that guys turn to that involve spray and bald spots. The solution is 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. 4hims.com combats baldness the right way. It's backed by science and connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. No waiting rooms, shady doctor visits down a back alley. Just go to 4hims.com, F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com, and take action today. It's that easy. The products will be brought directly to your door. So order now. Our listeners will get a free trial month of 4hims for just $5 today. Order now while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. So go to 4hims.com/Florian. That's F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com/Florian. 4hims.com/Florian. All right, now with us on the guest line, thankfully, a man with still a full head of lettuce and not a gray one among them. Another big weekend for American Top Team. There he is, UFC veteran, outstanding coach. Pretty decent guy as well, Dean Thomas in all his glory. My man, it's good to see you. You make Ken Flo smile. I know he's tired, so thank you for coming on, my man.
Well, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be on the show with you gentlemen, and I'm just glad to be here.
How often do you get a haircut, man?
Who, me? Yeah. I get a haircut like once a week. You know, brothers, we need haircuts once a week. You know, and I know, John, you probably need a haircut because you got short hair. You probably need a haircut once a week, too.
I do. We know Ken Flo doesn't cut it unless he has to because, you know, the lettuce pays the bills.
Ken Flo's hair makes his own appointments or when it wants a haircut.
Exactly. It cuts itself.
Yeah. So before we get to Shoeface, Antonio Carlos Jr., and the outstanding work you did with him this weekend, I want to start with Dustin Poirier. I got to think you guys feel pretty lucky to have this guy representing ATT. Hard worker. And really, I think starting to reap the benefits that all of that hard work was working towards, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Dustin is a tremendous athlete, a tremendous fighter. I mean, he was the type of guy that was born to fight. And his performance this weekend, for me, is one of his better performances. It was legendary. And just, you know, he is what younger fighters need to look up to when it comes to building a career. I mean, here's a guy who's had his ups and downs, but never let that hold him back. Never let it set him back. And I feel like, you know, it's his time right now. Like, he's done so much in the sport, but it's still his time right now.
And I know among your bigger takeaways from that performance was just the striking accuracy and just the pistons being thrown in Gaethje's face. Not that you were surprised, but Dustin landed at a high clip, over 65%, and certainly had his way and had the hands going Saturday.
Yeah, you know, I've always felt like Dustin was an extremely accurate puncher. But what surprised me more so than that was his defense, really, and not being hit as much as I thought he might be capable of being hit. And that's not to disrespect Dustin. It's just he said he was going to work on his defense, and it clearly showed that he really did work on his defense. Now, obviously, the leg kicks were a problem, but his ability to not take a lot of like crazy punishment upstairs is what really stood out to me with the way this fight played out.
Yeah, that was a huge difference, man, because sometimes Dustin does get caught in playing the other fighter's game. I don't think he did that in this one. Although it was a crazy fight, he showed that he was the more technical guy, and he was very disciplined in his approach. Was that a big part of you guys, you know, coaching him, saying, listen, you got to be super disciplined. Do not play Gaethje's crazy brawling game.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been Dustin's problem. Everybody knows that, is that when he gets a little too emotional, he always ends up fighting the other guy's fight.
Yeah.
And the one thing that we focused on with Dustin was, you know, keeping him calm and keeping him focused and disciplined, like you said, Kenny. And I think that discipline was the deciding factor in this fight, because he never really got out of pocket. He never got out of form. He stayed true to what he knew he could do, and that was box. And his boxing looked tremendous. I mean, he was hitting him with combinations. He was sticking and moving. He never really got touched up too bad upstairs. He took a couple shots, but not too bad, considering that it was a crazy fight. With the exception of the leg kicks, I thought he looked fantastic.
Yeah, it seemed like the damage was probably just from those eye pokes more than anything else upstairs. But, you know, Dean, I wanted to talk to you about Amanda Nunes and her fight coming up against Raquel Pennington. Is there any bad blood at all? Obviously, Tisha Torres used to train with you guys. Is there any animosity going on between those two or no?
No, it's weird. It's crazy because, like, when they came, like, Tisha Torres and Raquel was down here maybe a month ago, and they were all hanging out.
Wow.
It's weird that you have a relationship like this where these two fighters, like, they really legitimately like each other.
Mm.
I don't think that you're going to see any trash talk or anything like that. These are two fighters that like each other. But I know that Amanda, she doesn't want to give her belt away that easily.
Yeah.
Even though I think she holds Raquel true to her heart, she's still going to try to take her head off.
That's for sure, man. That's what makes her so exciting. How is she training for this fight?
She does her own thing, really. I mean, she's, you know, Amanda's always been the type of fighter who kind of wakes up in the morning and goes, this is what I want to do today. Mm. Call this person, get them in the gym right now, and we're going to work. And I think she fights better when she does that. I don't think she likes to be led too much. I think that's been her problems in the past, where she allowed people to dictate her training a little too much. And when they dictated her training, I don't think she was, you know, she stayed, I don't think she felt positivity in camp, because she felt like people were just trying to dominate her. When she's able to kind of have some say in what she does in her training, she's a really hard worker. She'll put in extra rounds. She'll do more than you ask of her when you allow her to kind of dictate what she wants to do, believe it or not. When she says, hey, listen, let's come in and do 5 rounds, she'll give you 10. And that's kind of what she's doing in this camp. She's in the gym every day working really hard and pushing herself. But for a fighter like that, she needs to be able to push herself and not allow others to push her.
Yeah. No, that's well put, and it is an interesting dynamic to that fight, because Rocky Pennington does not strike me as somebody who would want to be buddy-buddy with their opponent, but given that they have sort of a pre-existing relationship, there's only so much you can do. Dean Thomas with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. So final thought on Dustin Poirier in terms of this 155-pound division, because even though some might say maybe one more, the Eddie Alvarez rematch, and I can understand why people would have that line of thinking, I say strike now, go for the Khabib Nurmagomedov fight. You believe that is the toughest fight for Dustin in the division, that matchup with Khabib Nurmagomedov?
Yeah, I mean, with Khabib's style, he's just the toughest matchup for anybody in the division, because, you know, nobody has found a way to keep him off of them. And once he gets on you, it's just really difficult to get him off. He's going to be the toughest fight for Dustin right now. But like you said, I mean, if Dustin can take that fight, it's a gamble. Obviously, it's a gamble. If he wins, he's the champ. If he loses, I don't think he loses anything in terms of his status or
right.
or his perception from anybody. So I feel like he could take that fight and just take that gamble. Just take that, you know, it's his time right now. He's positive. Get that fight if he can. And if he loses, hey, there's always a rematch with Eddie Alvarez. And then you got a lot of top competitors that make a good fight with him. Maybe the winner of Barbosa and Kevin Lee this right. next weekend coming up. So, yeah, I think it's a good opportunity to fight Khabib right now, though.
Yeah, and I do believe the Alvarez rematch will be there. And the way things go, you never know. His next fight could be against Eddie for the UFC's interim lightweight championship, right? I mean, you just don't know. So congratulations to Dustin. Now, you were in Glendale to corner Antonio Carlos Jr. What a night for Shoeface. Cara de Sapachi submits Tim Boach, fifth consecutive win. Your thoughts on this win? But also big picture, how far this guy can go, because I think a lot of us are starting to get excited that he can really make a run here at 85.
Yeah, I think he can make a run. I mean, you know, Tim Boach was a good opponent for him just based on style matchups. A lot of people – see, here's the thing with Antonio's style is that he's really, really, really good at jiu-jitsu, and most guys aren't that good at jiu-jitsu. So, like, you know, when you're in practice and you're training, like, defenses to the rear naked escape, rear naked choke escape, you will never get a guy like Shoeface on your back to mimic him. So you can get out of right. a regular person's choke or you can get out of a regular person's mount. But when you when you're as detailed and as skilled as Antonio Carlos Jr., it's very difficult to mimic that. So it's hard to find people to train with to be prepared for a guy like him. And because of that reason, I feel like he can go extremely far in this game. And his striking is coming along. He's just naturally heavy-handed and he kicks really hard, and people have underestimated that. And I think now they're starting to open their eyes up to it. When he fought Jack Marshman, Jack Marshman was like, wow, I was surprised how good right. your striking was. Tim Boach obviously felt the same as well. He's not just a jiu-jitsu guy because he hits really hard, though.
So I know you guys didn't call anybody out, and certainly that is not Shoeface's calling to get on a mic and start barking for names. I do think, as I told you, though, at the airport, I think he's starting to get that requisite mean streak that I think you need to take your shots at the elite guys. You mentioned Brad Tavares, and the other middleweights to win fights on this night were Israel Adesanya and Brad Tavares. I don't think he's getting Adesanya necessarily, but Tavares is the ranked guy, Dean, and the more I researched it this morning, I think you're onto something. I think that fight has legs.
Yeah, I think that's the fight that makes sense. I mean, a fight with Israel Adesanya, I mean, obviously they're trying to build him up, and it would be right. a waste to, like, put so much into him and then have him lose to a guy like Shoeface.
Right.
I think a fight with Brad Tavares just makes more sense for both of their careers because the winner is just right at the cusp of, you know, really doing big things. So I think that fight makes sense. I mean, it's a good fight for Shoeface. Brad Tavares is a tough guy. He just knocked out another one of our teammates right. in Christoph Jocko. But, you know, that's the game. This is the sport that we play. We live by the sword. We die by the sword. And you got to take chances and you got to take opportunities when they.
Well, maybe ATT will get another crack there at Brad Tavares. So what's next on your schedule, man? Are you traveling to Atlantic City this week or you got a little downtime?
No, I'm not headed to Atlantic City this weekend. I am going to Liverpool on the 27th with Jillian Robertson, who fights Molly McCann. And then the weekend after, I'll be in Utica with Jessica Aguilar. She fights Jody Escobar. I got my work cut out for me with some pretty tough matchups.
All right, man. We'll keep it going. Always good to see you. And we'll see you in Utica, New York, I guess, on June 1st, buddy. I appreciate you hopping on.
Guys, thank you.
Thanks, Dean.
The great Dean Thomas with us on the Anakin Florian podcast. We only book former Florian victims. I'm telling you, we book guys that he beat. You will not hear from BJ Penn Jose Aldo and Sean Shirk on the Anakin Florian podcast. That's just what we do. So, Ken Flo, I know you didn't see Shoeface's win over Tim Boach, yep. but I know how familiar you are with him, and I know also how familiar you are with the result that we digested back in March of 2016 when one Daniel Kelly beat Shoeface.
Yes.
To the surprise of a lot of people. And I was on the bus with Shoeface going to the airport after that fight, and it was hard in that moment, even though I think very highly of Antonio Carlos Jr., to think that he was going to vault into middleweight contention because it just didn't seem after that. You know, there were just some things that night that needed to be addressed. I know there were circumstances. It was Australia. It was an early fight. He gassed all of that.
Right.
Since, though, He's won 5 in a row. And when you bring these type of jiu-jitsu credentials with improving hands that are heavy, that saw you realize an Ultimate Fighter title at heavyweight, I think Antonio Carlos Jr. is going to be a problem for a lot of these guys at 85, and I think he matches up favorably with a lot of guys right now in the top 10.
He's big for the division, right? And he does come with some good credentials from Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I think he is going to have a huge advantage in that division with his Jiu-Jitsu, you know, besides a guy like a Jacare Souza, for example. But, you know, I think that he is improving. And back when he lost to Daniel Kelly, I forget how long he was training in mixed martial arts for, but it was not very long. He hasn't been doing this for a very long time. He was very similar to me when I went on The Ultimate Fighter. I was basically a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guy who was like, yeah, I'll try mixed martial arts. We'll see what happens. And he is kind of in that same situation. Now he's learning the other aspects of the sport. He's learning how to put it all together. I think he's got a lot of potential in that division.
And he just beat a guy who had 23 UFC fights in Tim Boach, and I thought Shoeface looked very good on the feet. So a big win for Antonio Carlos Jr. Back, though, to the guest line now, and joining us is a man who is at the beginning of what is his 6th UFC fight week. UFC heavyweight, the Vanilla Gorilla, Chase Sherman, is with us, and he had his pupils dilated within the last hour, so he's a good man for getting on with us today. Good to see you, man. What's going on?
What's up, man? I can still see y'all's beautiful faces.
See, Chase Sherman is not stoned during fight week, ladies and gentlemen. He just went to the ophthalmologist, all right? So are you in New Jersey yet? Are you still home or what?
I'm still at home. I fly out tomorrow.
All right. So this Saturday night, as many of our listeners know, you get Justin Willis, Boardwalk Hall, Atlantic City, New Jersey. This fight part of the main card on FS1. First, let's just put that Shamil Abdurakhimov fight to bed. Obviously, that's the last time we saw you. It was November, Shanghai, China. And I watched it back this morning, man. I mean, you were getting some stuff done on the feet. Obviously, everything you throw is heavy. But what did you take out of not just that fight, but that training camp that you can use now moving forward?
You know, I went back and watched the fight as well, man. And I realized I was countering with the wrong hand. You know, a lot of times he was throwing that overhand right, and I was like, oh, look, the left side of his face is open. So I would go throw a jab and just get caught with like a count with the right hand, and instead of, you know, parrying and then countering with the opposite hand. So I was like, you know, I gotta get some fundamentals about me. I gotta really work on this defense, because the offense is there, obviously.
Right.
I got back home, and then as soon as I got back home, I started working with just a traditional boxing coach here in Biloxi. And that's really been helping me understand the fundamentals of the striking game, because once you get to this level, you really can't just get away with just athleticism, you know what I mean? Because a lot of these fighters are really intelligent, and they'll pick you apart. So that was a goal of mine. And a lot of stuff from the last camp, man, I really didn't get to display anything in that fight. So we're just kind of carrying that over. You know, ever since I've been with Coach Wink and those guys, they've really helped me out. And you know, it's the heavyweight division. You know, sometimes you get in there and you get clipped. You know, these are 265-pound grown men with 4-ounce gloves on, and it happens to the best of us. And it's just a learning experience.
And Shamil's awkward, too. He's a guy that's kind of hard to prepare for. But for Justin Willis, your next fight, how have you been preparing for Justin?
Man, I've been, you know, obviously he's a southpaw, so just been working with some good southpaws here in camp. And then, you know, he's got a wrestling background, and been working my wrestling, my grappling really diligently. Even before I got the call, you know, I've been trying to implement that into my game a lot more with my grappling coaches, being a little bit more disciplined with that. And, you know, a big thing for me was as far as, going for takedowns and things of that nature and engaging in the grappling aspect is because one of the reasons I haven't done it as much as because I didn't want to expend a lot of energy trying to take these big guys down.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I was like, you know what? I need to really implement that facet of the game into my my fighting. So I was like, you know what? I need to get stronger. You know, that's what I need to do. You know, I didn't wrestle in high school, didn't wrestle in college. So what's one thing that I can do? And I was like, you know what? Let me get back to my football strength. Let me get that explosion and that power back. Let me get back to, you know, being able to manhandle 265, 270-pound men, you know what I mean, like I used to be able to do. And so I went to a really good strength and conditioning coach. They work with a lot of NFL players and a lot of combine guys in Mobile called D1 Gyms. Man, and they've just really got me back to my strength, and it's really helped in the grappling aspect. As far as if the technique is lacking a little bit, then I can use what I need to use as far as my strength and conditioning goes.
Chase Sherman with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast, fights Justin Willis this weekend. And Willis 2-0 in the UFC, so I got to think there's some appeal in trying to hand a guy his first UFC loss. Now, you fought four times in 2017, and this will be your first fight of this year. So I guess that's going to be hard to duplicate. Was this the timeline that you were looking for to sort of lick your wounds and have a few months to work on some things, or were you trying to get back in there sooner?
Yeah, I mean, you know, all those cards in April came out, so I was like, man, hopefully I could get put on one.
Okay, yeah, well, there you go.
It was still short notice, you know, they called me like 4 weeks out.
Okay. Like,
you know, this is what we got, you know, take it or leave it. And since I've been asking for a fight, you know what I mean, I can't just turn it down because I don't want them to sit me on the couch for a while. So,
sure.
You know, we took the fight. And now we heading out on Tuesday, get it on.
All right, a couple more things before we let you go. I know you've been a guy who has used social media to your advantage. You know, I definitely think you have a voice and a presence and a tone that I think appeals to a lot of people. So how do you feel about your approach compared to say, what Colby Covington is doing? Because you guys have about the same number of Twitter followers, and some would suggest, given how much he has put into it, that – you know, he should be hitting six figures, and he hasn't necessarily. I mean, what do you make of that whole social media landscape and how you have chosen to connect with your fans?
I mean, I think it's just a little bit different in the aspect that, you know, he wants the attention in kind of a different limelight. Like, you know what I mean? He wants people to. As long as they're talking about him, that's all that matters. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
They hate him. If they love him, they love him. You know what I mean? Me, I'm just kind of, you know, I try to interact with the fans in a different way, as far as, like, you know, being a little bit more friendly. Now, if people are trolling me, you know what I mean? I'm kind of have more of a passive aggressive approach. I'm kind of a smart ass.
Right.
Where Colby's kind of just an outright dickhead. So,
right.
I don't know, man. You know, I don't worry too much about Colby. You know, yeah. I know he'll be watching the fight. So yep. I got to make sure I get that W, or Haz is going to be all over my Twitter trolling me. So
you know he will be. All right. So last thing. So good football career in college, by the way, for Chase Sherman. You heard him reference moving 275-pound men earlier. Senior year, Delta State University on the offensive line. Graded out 88%, all South Region third team, 14 starts. How much football do you watch these days? I mean, it sounds like you're just based upon your social media, you're a big combat sports fan. You're watching all of these UFC fights. Are you watching college football in the NFL?
Yeah, man. I'm like four or five fantasy leagues, man.
Oh, wow. All about it.
Yeah, I get on my Twitter and I'll talk about, you know, football, but, you know, most people don't even give a shit. You know, most people are my MMA fans, so a lot of it doesn't get a lot of hype behind it. But
right.
I'm a big Saints fan. You know, I live about an hour and a half from New Orleans, so, you know, we had a great year. Unfortunately, that crazy shit happened in Minneapolis.
Right.
And then, you know, I watch college football too. I kind of got away from it last year because my team, they didn't do too well. Their starting quarterback got hurt, and so I was just kind of like, eh,
yeah,
whatever. I'm just going to watch NFL now since we're not going to make the playoffs. But,
well,
yeah, man.
We love We love the football players crossing over, man. You know that. So we give a shit about your football career and who you root for.
Appreciate it. Yeah, man. I think it's a great sport to transition from. You know, being on the offensive line has really helped me with my hand placement. It's helped me with my footwork.
I bet, yeah.
It's helped me with leverage. It's helped me with takedown defense. You know what I mean? And then just the biggest thing about it is it just gives you that tenacity. You know what I mean? Like a lot of people talk about wrestlers and wrestling practice and stuff, and I don't discredit them in any way. I'm sure they have, you know, a hell of a job to do. But, man, when you're in South Mississippi and it's 110 degrees outside and you're 2 days in full fucking gear, you know what I mean? You're banging heads with 290-pound defensive linemen.
Right,
it's pretty rough, especially when you're walking through the parking lot with your gear on and you see ambulances already parked on the side waiting for people to have a heat stroke. So,
oh, I believe it, man. Yeah. No, that makes mixed martial arts training sound palatable. All right, Chase Sherman versus Justin Willis. It is this Saturday night on FS1. You can see it as part of the main card beginning at 10 p.m. Eastern. Chase, thank you for the time here, man, especially during fight week. We will not see you in Atlantic City, but we'll certainly be watching, bud. Thanks a lot.
Hey, y'all aren't coming to Atlantic City? Why not?
Well, we just had the back-to-backs in Brooklyn and Phoenix, so they try not to have us do three straight, man. So we'll be there in spirit, and you can be sure I'll be watching, man. I'll be drinking and watching. Let me have a drink, bro.
Come on, man. All right. Well, I appreciate y'all having me. I won't go any longer.
Thanks, Chase. You're the man. Good luck.
All right. Later.
All right. There he is. UFC heavyweight Chase Sherman taking on Justin Willis this Saturday on Fox Sports 1. Well, UFC fighters are tough. Guys like Justin Gaethje just refuse to go down. But you know what else is tough? Toyo tires. That's why Toyo has been a proud sponsor of the UFC. Just like the UFC fighters, Toyo tires are built for battle. It's an all-or-nothing philosophy. Durability, aggressive design, on- and off-road capabilities. Yes to all of them. Living life on the highway, Toyo has you covered there. Spending some serious time off-road, they have a tire for that too. No matter what you drive, Toyo has what you need, and frankly, these tires just look cool too. Any vehicle, every terrain, all or nothing, Toyo tires. So the next time you need tires, ask for Toyo. To experience more, visit toyotires.com/UFC, toyotires.com/UFC. All right, let's make some picks.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights! I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
All right, I'm going to try to keep this quick because we have our guest picker on hold. But I just want to set this up because last week, Kenny, you may have heard, was chasing points a little bit, right? You decided to pick a lot of underdogs because you were staring at a 10-point deficit. So we had a listener reach out and say, why don't you just do the picks according to the exact odds? Meaning, if you pick an underdog that is plus 130, you get like 1.3 points. And the idea has merit. We've talked about this in the past. We haven't done it in part because this contest has come down to the wire in the 2 years we've done it. It's been very close, so why fix it if it's not broken? It's also a long year, so it doesn't necessarily benefit you to start chasing points. So basically, every year we've done this, the guy who has picked the most winners overall has won the main event challenge. So I just didn't want to dismiss that idea entirely, so I just wanted to mention that.
Gotcha.
And for Ken Flo, hey, you want to chase underdogs, man. I mean, hey, you're 1-1 in the main event challenge. How you choose to proceed, it has nothing to do with Team Anik and our stable of guest pickers.
Yeah.
As for the standings, it was 40-30 going into UFC Glendale. You went head-to-head with Michael McLaughlin. You did get him on Michelle Waterson, Courtney Casey. He had Cowboy Oliveira. He also had Dustin Poirier by TKO. Nearly got the round right as well. So close week. Team Anik takes it 4-3. 44-33 going into UFC Atlantic City. And with us to make picks today from the state of Maryland, I believe, Emma Derenberger. Emma, appreciate your time today. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys?
Well, we're pumped to have you. And Kenny and I are old at this point, I know. But were you an MMA fan when Ken Flo was in his prime?
I was. Actually, he was one of the first fighters I enjoyed watching.
You know? Wow.
Not that young.
That's funny. Thank you, Emma.
We did not put her up to
that. We need more female guest pickers, John. This is good.
I'm trying, Flo.
It's good.
I'm trying.
I know. They don't reach out.
There are dozens of us out here.
Oh, no.
AnnickFlorianPodcast@gmail.com if you want to make picks. But we're happy to have Emma today. And let's get to it. Co-main event, Atlantic City, New Jersey. Rematch between a couple of recent T-City victims here, Frankie Edgar and Cub Swanson. Edgar took the first meeting against Cub Swanson. It was a five-round main event back in 2014. Frankie submitted Cub with a neck crank with 4 seconds to go in the fifth and final round. So the second meeting, the odds are as follows. Frankie, minus 225. Cub, plus 175. Emma, the floor is yours. Who do you like, Edgar or Swanson?
Well, it sucks. These are two of my favorite fighters. I have a Cub Swanson shirt I wear around. I do think Cub has improved a lot since the first fight, but I also think Frankie hasn't gotten worse, and I think his wrestling is still going to overwhelm Cub, so I got to pick Frankie.
Emma goes with Frankie Edgar. I just like her tone. I think we're going to have Emma back maybe even as soon as next week, Kenny. I mean, she's the furthest thing from nervous. I mean, you can tell. She ain't nervous at all. Fuck these guys. Ken Flo, Frankie Edgar, Cub Swanson, man. You know, it's interesting because Frankie, it will be 7 weeks since the Ortega knockout, but mm-hmm. it's still a decision that surprised a lot of people. Your thoughts on Frankie and Cub running it back here Saturday night?
Well, Emma's already making me nervous because I agree. I think Frankie's going to take this. I have a hard time believing that Frankie's going to lose in Jersey after coming off a loss to Ortega. I think Frankie is going to be extremely fired up. He had the blueprint on how to beat Cub the first time around. I don't imagine that he'll do something differently here. And I do agree with Emma as well that Cub is a different fighter, that he is improved since that first fight against Frankie. But I think Frankie's going to pull it off again.
All right, lightweight main event, close on paper here, according to the odds makers. Kevin Lee holding is the favorite, about minus 140 right now. Edson Barboza, the slight underdog at plus 110. So, Emma, we'll need the round, the method of victory, as well as this is the main event. Who do you think takes it here in Atlantic City, Edson Barboza or the Motown phenom, Kevin Lee?
I love both these guys, too, so it's a really hard week for me. But I think Edson does have better takedown defense than he showed in the Khabib fight. But I think Kevin's going to pressure him, take away his kicks, get him down, soften him up with punches, and finish him with a rear naked choke in the fifth round, pretty late.
Round five, rear naked choke. Kevin Lee is the pick for Emma. Ken Flo, your thoughts on Barboza and Lee coming up. Real quick before we get there, I just want to point out for Kevin Lee, he is back here for the first time since that October interim title fight with Tony Ferguson. That night he did have, of course, the late Robert Fallis in his corner. So that is part of the challenge here for Kevin Lee moving forward without his chief corner. I thought that was like a perfect yin-yang, the two of those, but I know that Kevin Lee has absorbed a lot of that wisdom and is going to take it forward with him, not just Saturday night, but in his career. So a lot of good was done there, despite the fact that he won't have Robert this weekend. Barboza, of course, Kenny against Khabib, didn't have a lot of answers, but certainly proved a lot to a lot of people. And with that backdrop, we'll need a selection, kid. Who do you like?
This is a tough one for me as well. I think Kevin Lee is a smart fighter, and I'm sure he learned a lot in that fight against Tony Ferguson. I think Edson Barboza is a tremendous striker. Again, this is a home game for him. I think that Kevin Lee does make some mistakes on the feet. I think he's a tough matchup. If Kevin can rely heavily on his wrestling and kind of copy a similar blueprint to what Khabib did, I think he can give Edson a really tough time and win that fight, no doubt about it. But I think Edson is the speed advantage, I think, for Edson, and just the fact that he could put together some nasty combinations and really hurt you both downstairs with your legs and upstairs or even into the body with that left hook, it's going to be tough for Kevin. I'm going to go with Edson here. This is a tough one, but I think Edson wins this one in around the third round. Let's go third.
Round three, you going TKO for Edson Barboza?
Yeah.
Kempflo likes that plus money on Edson Barboza. He's just got the poker face on, but he definitely likes it. All right, quick picks here on the way out, Emma. So at bantamweight, Longo's guy, Aljamain Sterling. So he had that win against Henan Barao last July. Then he got knocked out in 67 seconds by Marlon Moraes. Brett Johns on the other side, 15-0. Which way are you going here, Aljo or Brett Johns?
I like Brett Johns for this one.
Brett Johns. All right,
Kenny,
Aljo.
I like what I saw last fight.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Aljo.
Aljo. All right, next up, Dan Hooker. Back-to-back finishes for Hooker against Ross Pearson and Mark Chakasy, so he gets a bigger name here. New Jersey's own Jim Miller, who will be making his 29th UFC appearance. Emma, Jim Miller, Dan Hooker, who do you like?
Breaks my heart, but I'm picking Dan Hooker.
Dan Hooker, Ken Flo, Dan Hooker, Jim Miller. Who do we back here?
Yeah, I got to go with the Hangman on this one.
All right, and then finally, Ryan LaFleur returning for the first time since last July when he got knocked out by the aforementioned Alex Cowboy Oliveira. Here, LaFleur draws Ken Flo's former teammate Alex Garcia. He had a knockout of the King of Kung Fu, Muslim Salikov, his last time out. Emma, you going Ryan LaFleur or Alex Garcia?
Alex Garcia for this one.
Alex Garcia. Ken Flo, which way are you going? Garcia, LaFleur?
Yeah, I think if Garcia can get his conditioning in check and pace himself for this one, I think Garcia should win.
All right, Emma, great job. I wish we had, well, I wouldn't say a bigger card, but we're going to have you back for a pay-per-view, let you go five picks head-to-head against this guy and make him pay. Thank you for listening and for hopping on today. We will definitely have you back before the year's out.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
All right, good stuff there from Emma, Frankie Edgar, and Kevin Lee. Interesting main event, about where I thought the line would be, close to a pick 'em fight. All right, final thoughts on the way out here on this card in Phoenix, Arizona. Glendale, I should say. We didn't get a chance to talk about Michelle Watterson and some of the other big winners. I just wanted to get your 2 cents on Israel Adesanya and his split decision win over Marvin Vettori. I'm not sure if you saw this. Again, I think there was a lot of good in the fight for Adesanya. He was fighting a very durable, tough Italian in Marvin Vettori, who has improved his all-around game a lot. And again, I think there's value in these 15 minutes for Adesanya. He didn't get the finish, but I was surprised it was split, Kenny. I thought he did enough to win this fight fairly decisively.
Yeah, without a doubt. I don't understand that at all, but that's a scary result there. Thankfully, he was able to get the win. But yeah, for Israel Adesanya, he obviously won the first two rounds. The fact that there was a judge that thought that maybe he lost one of those rounds is pretty scary. The third round, he did lose, you know. He was taken down, and he definitely showed his vulnerability. I mentioned that last week. I said that's what kind of concerns me is the fact that Martin Vettori, if he does get him down, can do some serious damage, potentially submit him. But I think Vettori was a little bit too tired, a little bit too beat up to really do much to Israel down there. Israel's going to have to get better takedown defense. He's going to have to get better jiu-jitsu, period. That's what he should be working on. He also needs to perhaps stop putting so much pressure on himself to look good or get this flashy knockout, or he just needs to go out there and just fight. Just stick to what he's doing. Don't try to put on a show. Just fight, see what's in front of you, and take him out. On the feet, he's going to be a problem for anyone. He busted up Vettori pretty good on the feet, man.
Yeah. And the Karate Hottie looked great against Courtney Casey. She wanted the challenge of fighting a bigger, stronger opponent. She got it, and I thought she won that fight. Split decision for her.
Yes.
We mentioned Antonio Carlos Jr. Big win for the King of Kung Fu. Muslim Salikov gets his first UFC win. John Moraga continues to show a second version and move himself up the ladder, at least into the top seven at flyweight. Yushin Okami with a win. Adam Wieczorek, the Polish kid, with a Oma Plata, just the second in UFC history. Gilbert Burns with a massive knockout on UFC Fight Pass, which really, I think, stamps him as somebody to keep an eye on at 55. And then finally, Lauren Mueller in the women's flyweight division, one of the better women, I think, to come out of Alliance MMA. And this was her debut, nicely done over Shauna Dobson. I think Lauren Mueller can really turn into something. She's just getting started. So 14 fights. It was a scary proposition for broadcasters going in to prep for 28 fighters, but fighters delivered as usual, one of the best domestic crowds I have ever heard there in Glendale, Arizona. So another big Fox UFC fight night is in the books. Atlantic City, New Jersey, this Saturday night on FS1. Also, don't forget, if you are in the Southern California area and you like Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I am not one of those people. I do not like Brazilian jiu-jitsu. But if you are one of those people, Meraki BJJ, MerakiBJJ.com, M-E-R-A-K-I. I don't know how many times I have to plug this school to get a T-shirt in the mail.
I know. Jeez.
Podcast.
Yeah, my parents have been hassling as well. I got to get you. I will send you one out. Thank you so much, my man.
And it is 2:09. Every time I look at the clock, it is 2:09. You know, I don't know if that's a coincidence or not. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to our guests, Chase Sherman, Dean Thomas, Ray Longo, Emma on the picks, who did fabulously. Next week, we are back. We'll recap the Atlantic City show and begin to look at UFC 224, which is Nunes versus Pennington, May 12th in Rio de Janeiro. And speaking of which, Ken Flo, I got to go get these shots. Ready?
What do you got?
Hepatitis A, typhoid, hepatitis B, oof, malaria, and yellow fucking fever.
Yellow fever. Jesus.
If my wife wasn't pregnant, I'd probably take the risk, but I can't be bringing yellow fever back to Boca Raton, Florida.
So right. And you're talking about actual – yeah, I mean, yeah, that's not good. That's not good.
I got to toughen up.
Like malaria – like if you die from malaria, I mean, or yellow fever, like, come on.
But then it would just be the Kenny Florian podcast. That would be bad. And then you guys would really be off and running.
Yeah,
you
know? That would be bad, dude. We can't have that.
All right. Thank you all for listening, indulging us as usual. We love you. At Anik Florian Pod on Twitter. If you have guest suggestions, we will take them. With that, for Ken Flo and our fine crew, Ben Wasorek and the rest, thank you all. We will talk to you next Monday. Until then, yo, later.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.